Good morning. Call the meeting to order and begin right away. The first bill we have is House File 116. Representative Johnson, welcome to the committee. I understand we have some conflicts, and so we're going to make sure this bill is heard out of sort of the pace of the other things we are doing. But we're glad you're here. And I'm going to move Representative Johnson's bill, be recommended to be laid over, and we will welcome you with that. Inclusion and some recommendations.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to present this bill. And I have two testifiers with me. We don't plan on taking more than 10 minutes or so of your time this morning. Members, about a mile from here, as the crow flies, there's a 500-acre body of water in the southeast corner of St. Paul. It's called Pig's Eye Lake. It's part of the Mississippi River floodplain. And the lake and much of the surrounding landscape are part of a 1,200-acre complex of open water, wetlands, prairie, and woodlands. And it's actually the largest such complex in the entirety of St. Paul. But what this bill does is request $500,000 for bond proceeds to the Met Council for a grant to the city for pre-design and engineer improvements to Pig's Eye Regional Park and Pig's Eye Lake. And I have two people are going to come up to the table and join me here to say a few words about the history and why it's such an important bill before us. I'll let them identify themselves, but we have Don Arnasty, the policy director from Audubon, Minnesota, and also Dan McGinnis, who's a citizen river rat and a person who's been involved with the river as part of his career for much of his life. And gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Dan McGinnis. I'm a resident of the east side of St. Paul and trying to retire from over 44 years of work on the Mississippi River. Spent most of my life working on the river in various capacities. And so in the last 60 years, my wife's family have lived just above Pig's Eye Lake. It's not a very prestigious address, I grant, but it's a great place, and it's going to become a prestigious address if this bill is passed. And Pig's Eye Lake receives water from Battle Creek and from Fish Creek from the east, and is also connected to the Mississippi River main channel. So essentially it's the backwater of the Mississippi in the Mississippi River floodplain. And it's a part of St. Paul that's difficult to reach because there's rail lines on one side and the river on the other. But it has been traditionally used back in the 1960s as a dump site on the north end, and industrial development has occurred on the south side and a little bit to the east side of the lake. So it's been a site that's been not very well represented in the city's efforts to look at its total park system. But that changed in the last 2 years when the city of St. Paul, with support from numerous partners, developed what they call the Great River Passage Plan. And in your handout, you'll have a picture of the cover of the plan, as well as some sections of the plan that show the Pig's Eye Lake area. If you look on the map, you'll notice that Pig's Eye Lake is the most downstream part of the Mississippi River in the 17-mile stretch in St. Paul. But the Pig's Eye Lake area and the Highwood Bluffs adjacent to it comprise about 1,200 acres, or one-third of the total Great River Passage plan area. So it's a pretty significant part of the Great River Passage and St. Paul's Mississippi River Park system. But it is probably the area that's received the least amount of attention in terms of looking at improving water quality, improving habitat for birds, fish, and wildlife, and for improving public access so that people can enjoy the lake I get out there regularly. I know where the boat access is, and I know the way to get in there. But the backwater channel that connects the Pig's Eye Lake to the Mississippi is filling in with sediment, and it's increasingly difficult to get in there. But it is a beautiful place, and the picture on the front of the fact sheet is actually a picture from Pig's Eye Lake looking toward downtown St. Paul over the Mississippi River floodplain. So this is an area that has traditionally not had much attention, but with this bill and with this funding for this bonding bill, this would be an opportunity to start the process of bringing the stakeholders together, doing the engineering and design work, and actually getting some improvements started in this Pig's Eye Lake area. And one of the projects that we're thinking about for the lake to reduce the to improve water quality and improve habitat diversity and reduce the effect of the wind fetch coming across the lake, which resuspends the sediments, the fine sediments on the bottom of the lake, is a project called Floating Islands. These are used internationally. These are islands that are actually not built from filling the lake in from the bottom up, but actually using recycled materials and plant materials to create islands that are tethered to the bottom, like a buoy is tethered on the channel of the river. But they produce habitat, or they create habitat. They also reduce the wind fetch. We don't know if this is a project that's going to work, but it's something we're investigating. So we would like your support for this effort to begin the work on Pig's Eye Lake. And with that, I'll unless you have questions, I'll turn it over to the other next speaker.
Mr. Arnosti.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Arnosti. I'm the policy director for Audubon, Minnesota. I'm here to speak in favor of this and encourage your recommendation of investment in this project. The Great River Passage was a very significant effort that the city of St. Paul took to take a look at their waterfront and the Mississippi River Flyway, which travels right through our capital city. Audubon was participating in that, and we very much appreciate the focus that plan has on restoring the flyway habitats. These habitats are critical to the hundreds of millions of birds that move up and down the river of birds that come from the Gulf of Mexico. Many of the birds, of course, are wintering in the tropical regions even at this time. Twice a year we see these birds moving north and south right through our capital city and on into the rest of Minnesota and North America. Pig's Eye Lake has a heron rookery, which is reserved as a scientific and natural area. It's across from the barge terminals that you see there. I think it's labeled page 169 later in your package. And there's an island there which is critical to nesting herons in this area and has been very successfully coexisting with the industrial activity on the other side of the channel there. We think the Great River Passage plan, which calls for increased public access to this area in a way that does not overdevelop it, but allows some trails, some water access, and some opportunity for people to get out in this part of the metropolitan area where access to the river is very difficult. We think this was very important, and on behalf of both the St. Paul chapter and Audubon members statewide, we encourage your investment in this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I don't see any questions. Representative, okay. If you do have questions, we'll catch those. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, I'm just curious, is 100% of this proposed area in the floodplain?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, almost entirely, except for the Highwood Bluff area, I see there's a s- some involvement as well, but it's primarily the Pig's Eye Lake Wetland Complex.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when you say the Highland Bluff area, you're not referring to the Battle
Highwood,
Creek?
I'm sorry.
Highwood, is that just where the railroad, where the, looks like you show a pedestrian bridge near Lower Afton, near the parking lot? Is that what you're referring to, the Highland area, just at the end of the pedestrian bridge? Madam Chair, Representative Johnson.
Yes, I'm referring to the land that's right to the right of that. That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, my next question, Representative Johnson, it looks like the picture labeled 164. Are these like five boats on the lake? Are you proposing to do dredging in the lake? Is that picture actually show those, they look like, are they boats or something in the water there?
Yeah, those would be recreational boats. I do believe. I hadn't noticed them before. You got good eyes, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, so the current depth of the lake is, and then are you proposing dredging potentially with, use this bonding money to look at an alternative to dredge the lake, or what's the plan here? Because what's the current depth of the lake?
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, the current depth of the lake during normal summer conditions is about 3 feet. It's deep enough for canoes, kayaks, and small motorized craft. It's not deep enough for barges, and this plan does not propose dredging the lake to deepen it. The primary water craft use would be for small craft in the lake.
Thank you. And then just probably my last question, Madam Chair. So how would this development of this area help the, I mean, it's a real cool area for birds, both eagles and the rookery there, and waterfall use it. How would the development of that help this? I'm surprised that we want to develop this area. Why wouldn't we leave it natural and develop the Battle Creek Park across the road?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, this is more about access than development. The development refers to some trails and some public water access so that people can get in and enjoy the birds and the natural environment. As Audubon participating in the Great River Planning effort, we very much had the same view that I think you're indicating, that this is not about creating soccer fields or doing extensive development there. The sediment that's found in this lake, I've learned through the process of planning, is the largest single source of toxic contaminants to the upper Mississippi River. And that's due to a legacy dump that happened for many years just at the north end of this wetland. Representative McNamara is very on the right track to be concerned about the possible disturbance of these sediments, because we're not interested in resuspending those toxics, which due to some of the bald eagle monitoring, blood monitoring that we've been doing in this area, we're finding some of the bald eagles that depend on fish from this lake are reproductively impaired. Their young have problems because of the toxic load. The floating islands or other methods that might be used to reduce the wind fetch is a fancy term for a wave stirring up the water. It's a rather large lake, and when the wind blows over this very shallow lake, we get resuspension of these sediments. And if we're able to do something like anchor some of these floating islands above this contaminated sediment, we'll shield it from some of that resuspension work of the waves. So I think there's a very strong interest in being aware of some of the environmental challenges in this area and addressing those at the same time as allowing people to get in and enjoy the wildlife and access to the water.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a question about process. I see this is the only bonding bill we have on the agenda. Why is it here? Are we going to hear other bonding bills? Do we have a bonding target? Just kind of wondering what's going on.
We do not have a bonding target at this point. I expect we will have one. And what we're going to do is lay over all the bonding bills, and it's just, we had a witness that couldn't be here on our bonding day, and so that's why we're doing it this way. So it's one out of order. but we will hear the rest.
Thank you for that information, Madam Chair. And a question for the testifiers. I see, you know, looking at the map, how close this wetland is to the airport. In some cases across the country, we've had issues with birds and air traffic. Is that an issue in this case?
I think birds and airports are always concerns, as you say, Representative Torkelson, Madam Chair. We're not viewing that there's going to be anything different than what is there now, and that the we're trying to sustain the heron rookery, the eagle nesting that's going on, the waterfowl use. We have not heard from the St. Paul Municipal Airport that there's been any problems that they haven't been able to mitigate.
Thank you.
Representative
Ward?
Representative
Ward
passes. Representative
Fagan. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, I'm curious on the appropriation of the $500,000. It says to pre-design, design, and engineer. Does that mean that that would include all of the money that is needed to make the improvements that are being suggested?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, my understanding that would be used primarily for the planning process to get a sense in a clear way what makes the best way to move forward on the project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, then, Mr. Johnson, it would be somewhat helpful for me at this point. I mean, if we're going to spend $500,000 now just on the pre-design, how much are we going to actually spend on the project? I mean, ballpark figure.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, the Great River Passage Master Plan actually has a, I didn't include the sheets, but there are two pages in the plan, pages 166 and 170, which outline specific capital improvements that would eventually occur on the site. And we're probably looking in the neighborhood of, you know, $3 to $5 million in everything from bridges to trail access to floating boardwalks to remediation work to potentially floating islands. And other landscape improvements, but it looks to me like it's principally roads and trails, and I'd be happy to provide this information to you via email if that would be appropriate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, then, the extra $3.5 million that you're speaking about, what is your plan for acquiring those funds?
Madam Chair, Representative, the Great River Park Great River Passage Master Plan is a long-term plan by the City of St. Paul for the whole riverfront. This is one part of it, and not all sources have been identified for the plan. It's really a 20 to 30-year plan, and they would expect that these would be phased in over a long period of time. These funds requested in this bill are to begin the process of defining exactly what should go on the ground and in what priority order. And then the City of St. Paul is taking the lead with several stakeholders, the Port Authority, the county, the Metropolitan Council, and others, to decide what will get funded and in what priority order.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arnosti, can you give me an idea of how much money the Minnesota Audubon Society has?
Madam Chair, Representative Fayden, could you redefine that? Do you mean in the bank? What
I'm
our
just
annual
curious
budget
if,
is?
Or? What is your budget for projects like this throughout the next biennium?
We raise funds primarily from our members and from grants. We have a staff of about 8 or 9 people in the state. I think it might be 10 now. 10 people in the state. We get project funds from a variety of sources and do on-the-ground work, but we're not usually the sponsor of this kind of restoration project. Our total state budget is about $1 million a year, and that's for all the activities that we do in across the state.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious because if Audubon is a supporter of the project, it would seem to me that they would have some skin in the game from their members and so forth to improve you know, to make some of the improvements that are being requested here and not place as much of a burden on the taxpayers.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, 2,200 members of Audubon are taxpayers in the city of St. Paul. They're contributing, as all taxpayers do, to amenities across the state. And I'm certain that the St. Paul Audubon, which is the manner in which we do local partnership, our local community-based chapters, will certainly partner with the city of St. Paul on this and provide some support, whether it's in kind or some additional fundraising. But it's not a matter of our membership being able to write checks in large amounts.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm curious to know, you talked about the herons and the rookery. How many nesting pair of herons are in that rookery?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, I don't know the exact count. The last I recall was something like 60 nesting pair, but it does vary from year to year. And rookeries are sometimes even abandoned and then restored. But I'm sorry we could get that figure to you for more recent counts, but I'm not sure of the exact number.
And then one last question for anybody. You say here on line 1.8, 1.9 that you want to improve water quality and habitat for fish, wildlife, and birds. Can you give us some data that reflects where the water quality is now and where you want it to get in the future?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, water quality in Pig's Eye Lake is reflective mostly of the water quality of the Mississippi River in this stretch. It is, the inlet to the lake is just downstream of the Twin Cities Metropolitan Wastewater Treatment Plant, which is called the Pig's Eye Treatment Plant. But the water quality in the lake, like much of the Mississippi River, is slowly improving in many respects in terms of the organics. The primary water quality problem in Pig's Eye Lake is one that is a potential if the sediments on the lake are continually resuspended, because some of the worst contaminants from the old dump sites are in the sediments at the bottom of the lake. And if we can keep those sediments from resuspending by reducing wind fetch, we will be dealing with that problem. Otherwise, as we continue to clean up river water quality on the Mississippi, that will be reflected in the improvement in water quality in the lake as well.
Madam Chair, last question, if I may.
Let me just interject here for just a moment. I have, I'm changing the schedule around because I understand that if you all will look, Jeff Schoenbauer, who's near the bottom of the schedule, he's a planning and design consultant, needs to leave at 9:15. So if we want to accommodate him, and I would like to do that, we are going to have right after this Mr. Steffrud, and then we'll have Mr. Schoenbauer, and he will be finished at 9:15. So I hope we can keep our questions short to give him an opportunity. With that, Representative Fabian, did you have?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just one last point, and that would be, oftentimes with bonding projects, there's a local match that's involved. I'm just curious to know what the city of St. Paul or the county has for a local match in this project.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, we don't have currently a confirmed local match from the city of St. Paul for this specific project, but I will inquire with them. They couldn't be here today. I did confer with their chief planner on this project, who's out of town this week, but I'll get back to you with that.
Representative Anderson, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. As I understand, the park currently, because of its great value for birding, is closed for about 3.5 months every year from April through July 15th. Would that still be the case with all these improvements and better access for citizens? Would it still be closed for that long a period of time?
Madam Chair, Representative, the part that's actually closed and it is signed is the island that is the Heron and Egret Rookery. The rest of the lake, in fact, is open, and much of the land around the lake is actually public open space. It's just difficult to get to. But only the island is off limits during the nesting season.
Representative Erickson, did you have a question?
No.
Representative Benson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a real quick one. Mr. Arnsby, I guess is how you pronounce it. I'm just wondering, we had a couple of questions about the Audubon Society's interest in this, and I assume that the Audubon Society is simply an educational and advocacy organization. And I just like you to confirm what I assume, and that is that the Audubon Society has no financial interest in the issuing of these bonds.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, I can absolutely confirm that. We have no interest beyond that of every citizen of the state.
I think with that, I appreciate the questions, and we will lay this over for later consideration. And with that, we'll bring up Mr. Arnosti. Mr. Steffrud, and members, just keeping in mind that we would like to hear from Mr. Schoenbauer, who has traveled down here but needs to leave at 9:15, and that works well within our schedule. Mr. Steffrud, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Arnie Steffrud. I'm the manager of the Regional Parks and Natural Resources Unit at the Metro Council. And you've asked me to present the governor's budget for Metropolitan Regional Parks. I gave you an overview on February 14th, so I'm just going to hit the highlights in this particular presentation.
Thank you. I think maybe you, since you've given us great information before, you may just take the very highest so that you have some time for questions.
Great.
Because my instinct is that questions will take longer than your presentation.
All right, very good. The Metro Park system is owned and operated by 10 regional park implementing agencies, 6 counties, which are depicted here, Anoka, Ramsey, Washington, Dakota, Scott, and Carver, plus Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, the City of St. Paul, the City of Bloomington, and Three Rivers Park District. We have about 55,000 acres of land currently open for use, 44 million annual visits. We have 39 regional parks and trails. An example is Lake Waconia Park in Harper County, plus 12 park reserves such as Rice Creek, Chain of Lakes in Anoka County, and special recreation features including Nuremberg Gardens in Three Rivers Park District on the North Shore of Lake Minnetonka, and then 308 miles of regional trails that are linking these parks together. And an example is Big Rivers Regional Trail in Dakota County. We have a request for operations and maintenance of $2.87 million of general fund revenue per year and $5.67 million of natural resources fund money, which is consistent with what the current biennium's appropriation is. And then in regards to the legacy, Parks and Trails Legacy Fund, we are proposing $32,394,000 for the biennium. This pie chart illustrates how those dollars would be spent in alignment with the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. About 57% would be to build new park and trail facilities, 19.3% to take care of what we have, 20% for land acquisition, and about 3% for connecting people to the outdoors, plus a very small amount for working better together. In this case, it's to do project management over several projects to save funds from that perspective. This money is being leveraged with $25 million of federal grants for trails, plus $3.8 million from the Metro Council's bond funds and park agency matches for land acquisition. This describes what all would be accomplished. 85 acres would be acquired approximately. There are 12 projects dealing with park rehabilitation, as well as developing new facilities and parks, rehabbing 4 miles of regional trails, and developing 31 miles of new trails, continuing 4 environmental education and volunteer programs, and 3 natural resource management programs. And the parks affected by this appropriation, 19.4 million annual visits to these parks and trails currently, and 1.8 million projected for new park and trail projects. So we allocate this money amongst the 10 park agencies using a formula in state law, and this is the amount each agency would receive. And That, Madam Chair, is my presentation to allow the opportunity for questions.
Questions from members?
I should add that the project list is at the back of your handout. Details for each of the projects, the dollar amounts proposed for each project, plus any federal matches the trail grant.
Seeing no questions, Mr. Stafford, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Mr. Schoenbar? Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Jeff Schoenbauer. Oh, there you are. With Schoenbauer Consulting, I'm a planning consultant and working in this case with Greater Minnesota on their strategic planning efforts. I've also had the opportunity to work with Minnesota DNR and Metro Parks over the years. So I have a pretty straightforward presentation this morning to bring you up to speed as to where Greater Minnesota is in their planning activities and planning for the use of and appropriation of legacy dollars, and I'll try to get through that fairly quickly here and then just leave open an opportunity for questions that you might have. Some of you are perhaps familiar with past presentations that myself and others have made in regard to in front of legislative committees with respect to Greater Minnesota's planning efforts and their strategic plan, which is an outgrowth of the 175 plan, which was a legislated mandate requirement for Greater Minnesota to develop a strategic plan and better coordinate how they would use legacy dollars going forward. We're now undertaking the initial and basically what that plan calls for, those of you that aren't familiar with it, is Greater Minnesota becoming essentially the third leg of the stool and complement Minnesota DNR and Metro Parks in dealing with legacy dollars for regionally significant parks and trails. We're now undertaking the initial steps in implementing that plan, and I'll share with you where we're at with that. Essentially, what we've done to complement what DNR and Metro has is we've taken the legacy plan and created different classifications so that we can develop criteria and establish a means by which opportunities, regionally significant opportunities in Greater Minnesota, will be vetted and ranked and ultimately prioritized for funding in future years. Now, I'd also like to suggest that Greater Minnesota has a kind of a two-part strategy in the way they're thinking about funding appropriations. One of those is to focus on those four pillars that we're becoming familiar with, which include connecting people to the outdoors, creating opportunities, taking care of what we have, working better together, and acquiring land, and so forth. But Greater Minnesota also wants to be very diligent about looking for new and innovative ideas and opportunities out there to take parks and trails in Greater Minnesota to the next level. And those, some of you might be familiar with the Cuyuna Mountain Bike Trail project that the DNR did a couple years ago, and that is proving to be quite successful. It's that type of thing that Greater Minnesota is also going to be striving to discover and act upon in the future. And in talking through these issues with a number of the folks in Greater Minnesota, I spoke with the mayor of Bemidji just the other day, Rita Albrecht, and she concurred that whereas recreation is important to Greater Minnesota, she doesn't want us to lose sight of the fact that economic development and the vitality of the communities out there is also equally important to them. And just using Bemidji as an example, they're a growing regional medical center, or the medical industry is important in that region. The University of Bemidji State University is important. And these types of investments are critical to them creating a community that people, that will attract top professionals to come and live and recreate. So we're keeping those types of things in mind as we go forward too, particularly in these early years in terms of what type of investments would have the most impact. And some of you are familiar from perhaps past presentations that there's previous studies out there that have defined somewhere between 125 and 130 regionally significant parks and something like 40 regionally significant trails. And what we've done, just to give you a sense of how we're moving forward, we pulled together, based on our strategic plan, a peer review team that is now starting to apply the criteria for each of these three different categories and trying to determine which of those parks that are listed or presumed to be regionally significant really have the most merit. And just to give you a sense of where we're at in our initial work is, of those 130, we have in what we call a yes category, which are park units that seem to match up well against criteria. We're somewhere in the neighborhood of 35, give or take. There's also some that are not on that list that we're aware of that we're considering. We also have a maybe category of another 40 or so that may meet that criteria, but there's more due diligence required there to make sure that we understand those better. And frankly, there's some 40 or so on that list that we simply don't think will match up well against the criteria. With trails, the same type of thing is happening. The trail inventory work is less complete in our minds than the park-related work, and so we have less there to think about. But in that case, I think we have 13 yeses, 12 maybes, and 8 noes, for example. It's also important, I think, with respect to trails, to remember that Greater Minnesota is in early stages of discussions with DNR as to what is defined as a state trail and what might be defined better as a regional trail going forward. And so those two planning processes are expected to move forward kind of jointly in the coming years and time frames here. And I think what this exercise that we've done so far is starting to prove is that the strategic plan that's been adopted by Greater Minnesota rather unanimously is starting to prove its merit in the sense that it's starting to put Greater Minnesota itself in the chair of deciding where its priorities are to maximize the, you know, the outcome of these dollars that are going to be invested in future years, and to make sure that those are strategically done to the benefit of not only those in the communities that from a recreational purpose, but also from the context of economic development and just keeping these communities in Greater Minnesota vital. What I'd like to do is just share with you a sampling of some of these parks and trails that we're starting to discover, and just to give you a sense that there are a lot of great opportunities. And in the early years of plan implementation, the difficulty isn't going to be finding opportunities. The challenge will be deciding which are going to be the priorities. For example, in Greater Minnesota's case, there's been relatively little regional level funding available over the years. So many of these parks have literally been sitting there for decades looking for funding, and many of them have very good master plans already in place and ready to go. It's just a matter of which of those are the highest priority. But I'll just start by jumping around the state a little bit here with a few examples. Maybe. One common example that we've been familiar with is Quarry Park up in Stearns County. This happens to be a plan that I did a master plan for back in the mid-90s. And some development certainly has happened, but this is a good example where it's underdeveloped at this point, and there's a lot of great opportunities that are being missed simply because the Stearns County has not had the capital to move forward and fully develop it. It's a rather unique site in Stearns County. The Lake Wobegon Regional Trail is another example that is shovel-ready, if you will, for additional expansion. And in this case, it's about 50 miles on the ground right now, but there's about 2.5 miles, if I recall correctly, that are ready to be built that would tie that trail right into the heart of a populated area. And those types of gaps are what we're really trying to discover and find out as well. We also have in Wright County, Bertram Chain of Lakes Regional Park, just a wonderful facility. And here over the last few years, the state has, through legacy and other funding, has been acquiring property. And this property here, they're moving forward with completing their master plan, and that'll be ready at any point in time for development dollars as well. If we jump up now to that greater Bemidji area, here Paul Bunyan and South Shore Parks on the south side of the lake is a real good example of complementing the state trails and the state parks that are up in that region. It also complements an investment the city's made over the last decade of about 10 or more million dollars just in parks and trails. They've also developed a major civic center complex, and completing this in part through legacy dollars, is a great example of how leveraging these previously investments would take the place and be complementary. And I think a critical thing with Paul Bunyan here in talking with the mayor, they're prepared to put a substantial amount of local match in regard as well to make sure that this project comes off well. And this particular area will include things like nice ride bikes and so forth, so that if somebody's touring through the city, they can rent a bike for an hour or two and use the trail, the state trail system, and go over to the state park and so forth. This particular park is also adjacent to the downtown area, and they've been really working hard to try to revitalize that through, in part through wise investments like this. If we jump to the Duluth area, for example, the Duluth Lakefront Boardwalk, everybody's probably familiar with. There's some additional work that could be done here immediately. One of the key things as far as Duluth is concerned is making a connection over to from the lakefront area to the Munger Trail. I think it's about a 4 or 4.5 mile stretch. And that, again, would be another example of making the connection that would be both increased tourism and increased local opportunities as well. The other thing I think that's interesting in the Duluth area is there's a plan in place for a major mountain bike venue, basically that would complement Cuyuna Mountain Bike Trail System. And the thinking there is that on a broad basis is that Minnesota could indeed become a mountain biking mecca and tourism destination with the likes of Cuyuna, Duluth perhaps, and the metro area existing trails that are in place all complementing each other. When we jump around now down to the Rochester area, this Oxbow Regional Park, if those of you that are not familiar with it, I'd actually recommend going down here. It's a little zoo facility outside of Rochester, and it really is extremely popular, well-used. And it's well used not only by residents, but in some cases international visitors who are at the Mayo Clinic and have some extra time for their family. And these parks down there we see as an opportunity for allowing people to recreate and relax when they're in that condition or in the system. And I guess what I find interesting in talking to the folks down there is that the Mayo Clinic, I believe, estimates that patients spend 20 to 30% of their time actually in clinic, and they have 70% of their time available there around their schedules. And what we're hoping is tapping into that kind of research and figuring out what it is that we could do in terms of regional investments that would promote that opportunity and provide people a chance to, you know, get away. So that's it. I think spattering of things. Now, with respect to trails, here's really an interesting dynamic that we're working through at DNR is the DNR obviously are the state, there's a lot of defined state trails, and some of those are relatively low priorities as far as greater Minnesota is concerned. So what the planning idea is going forward is to take a look at all of those in the context of DNR and think about which of those should be truly state trails and how are those defined, and which of those trails should be regional trails and how are those defined. And why that matters is that decisions made at the state level as far as investments may be different than those that might be made at the regional level in terms of investment. And we would expect that this process is already starting to move forward, both within DNR and Greater Minnesota, but also the Legacy Advisory Committee is contemplating these things as well. I guess I would basically then, where we're at right now is we've done this initial vetting just to get ourselves in a position. And the goal with Greater Minnesota is in some organizational structure as defined by the plan is we want to be able to bring in representatives in a meaningful way across the state. The idea is to have a board of directors, if you will, in some form of commission idea. And there's a legislative bill in process now to put that forth. And then we also anticipate having some regional planning committees because we do recognize that there are differences in different parts of the state in terms of demand and the type of things. So one could imagine on the North Shore where it's state park heavy, the regional amenities that would be provided up there would be probably quite different than what would happen in the Rochester area, where you have more of a traditional population center with more traditional regional park demand. And then finally, what Greater Minnesota's goal is in these first few years, because again, we've got significant pent-up demand, if you will, is we want to make wise, basically cherry-pick the obvious ones that would be good investments that would really benefit different areas of the state and do that wisely. We also want to make sure that we don't overreach with this plan going forward, that we want to develop the plan based on in the context of what is reasonably going to be available over the course of legacy or other funding cycles, so that we truly understand what it is that can be accomplished. And basically, we don't want to oversell Greater Minnesota on the possibilities, because we do want to focus our attention on the things that really matter, which goes back to the spirit of the legacy plan, which is Minnesotans want us to do good things with this money. And to Greater Minnesota's credit in our working with them, they very much understand that. We've worked through the issues of dealing with regionally significant investments versus local investments. And as you can imagine, some people aren't happy with that. But I think to the credit of the leadership in Greater Minnesota, they've addressed those issues forthrightly and move that discussion forward to the point where we're at now, where we can actually start getting serious about what's in and what's out. With that, I'll turn it over for questions, any questions that you might have as we think about this.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenbauer. Questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Schoenbauer, for the presentation. Can I just ask, is every community in Greater Minnesota potentially eligible for Greater Minnesota grant?
Potentially, as long as they meet the baseline regionally significant criteria defined in the legacy plan, that could be a local, that could be a city, a county, or a township. We've considerably tightened up those requirements as part of the strategic plan. Basically, the criteria are much tighter than would be the case. And those that are going to be rising to the top and rank the highest will be the best of the best, is what. And to, again, to the credit of the leadership in Greater Minnesota, they've got that message across. And we've done a number of regional meetings across the state. And basically, what we saw in a very positive way out of that is those leaders in, let's say, the Bemidji area, for example, they're already thinking through, if we're going to propose a given project, which one should it be of the many that we have to choose from? Because they'll know the criteria and they'll know that there's limits on the dollars. So we're really feeling good that each area of the state will be disciplined about putting forth projects and supporting projects that are the greatest merit. And they're not naive at all, to the point that if they put forth projects that simply are not significant, down the road, the legislature will take action against that.
Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I'll just use the Bemidji, you know, the testifier brought that one up. Mr. Schoenbauer, if I'm not mistaken, Bemidji has a population somewhat similar maybe to Hastings in Dakota County, substantially less than Cottage Grove, two communities I represent. Unfortunately, the proposal you have is on the beautiful Lake Bemidji in Bemidji. It's adjacent to downtown Bemidji, and it's an opportunity for Bemidji to tap into the legacy money and do some really good things in a neat area along the water. Unfortunately, in Hastings, we have the Mississippi River, St. Croix along Denmark Township, and nearby Cottage Grove, and we can't tap into the Metro Park money. So, Mr. Chair, when we get done with this testifier, I would like to ask Mr. Stefferud to come back and understand why the Greater Minnesota has an opportunity and open to everybody, why in the metro area, even though we get twice as much money as you do, we don't let everybody be part of it. It's an unfortunate situation. So, thank you. I just wanted to understand.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think you bring up a good point. I'm recalling back to my previous work with Bemidji, but I think the local population there, the city itself is 12,000, if I have my numbers right. The regional population right around Bemidji was 75,000. So that's what we're looking at here in terms of what they've been doing. They've been focusing on that regional population, but they're also looking at it as economic development, i.e. Tourism and so forth. So those are the type of things. And this is another good example where we don't know at this point if that particular project is going to be at the top of the list. That's something for Greater Minnesota to work through as we go through the process here.
Further questions from members? Thank you, Mr. Schoenbauer. Appreciate your time, and we even got you out of your 5 minutes early.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mr. Brian Rice.
Mr. Chair?
McNamara?
I'm just wondering if I can ask Mr. Stefferud just the rationale. It's interesting that the greater Minnesota is open to everyone, but we've got these artificial barriers.
Sure.
In
Mr.
the
Stefferud,
metro.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, the regional park agencies are serving not only the county, for instance, that I described in my presentation, but the cities within those counties. And in an example of serving Hastings, there's a trail, regional trail, linking Hastings to Spring Lake Park Reserve, which was funded with state dollars. Some of it may have been legacy dollars. I don't have that information in front of me. In the case of Cottage Grove, the Cottage Grove Ravine Regional Park is in the city of Cottage Grove, and we have provided significant amounts of funding to acquire land for that park and to develop it. And we work with Washington County that owns and operates that unit. So we're trying to serve residents of your the cities within your district through these county park agencies and obviously other local units of government in those areas as well.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly am familiar with the trails, and actually it goes right by my back door, not my front door, so I certainly know where it is. But the reality, you've included the city of Bloomington. You haven't included the city of Richfield. You haven't included the city of Cottage Grove or Hastings. We have more natural characteristics than Bloomington, sorry, other than their part right along the Mississippi. No, I don't mean that as a negative influence on Representative Lencheski, but I would restate that we certainly, with the St. Croix and the Mississippi, rival the Minnesota River in the Bloomington area in the natural characteristics. I just don't understand why we're supposed to give all this money to just these 10 entities and cut off. Cottage Grove has got a very aggressive plan, and it's not eligible for the regional park money. Granted, the regional park that's within their city limits is. Anything they want to do outside of the regional park area, other than you might connect us to a trail, it doesn't seem to be fair, and I'm trying to understand why I'm supposed to get all ginned up and jump up and down for my local regional parks and my communities get cut out.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, Madam Chair and Representative McNamara, in regards to local governments working with these 10 agencies, there are many examples where they have partnered, especially with trail projects that benefit that community and provide access by that trail to a regional park. And there are examples up in Anoka County that I can cite on that, and that would be the approach that we would suggest in the case of Cottage Grove, working with Washington County on projects that would benefit city residents that are consistent with our regional parks and trails policy plan. The city of Bloomington owns and operates a portion of a 2,000-acre park reserve. That's why it's one of the 10 regional park implementing agencies. They are working with Three Rivers Park District that owns the other portion of that park reserve, but that's how they are part of this regional system. That's historic, if you will. It's been around since the system was established in 1974.
Madam Chair, Mr. Stefferud, we just had up on the screen a picture of a park in Bemidji. Bemidji is a community similar to the ones I represent, and they're eligible for this pot of money from Legacy for something that I could envision on the shores of the Mississippi in my community, or Lake Rebecca in my community, or Lake Isabel in my community, or in a number of the ones in Denmark Township or Cottage Grove. And I'm trying to understand why we say, no, you're not eligible, but these other entities are. There's no way it's fair. It's not fair. Everybody in outstate can get it, and in the metro, you got to be part of the club or you're Knicks, and it's not right.
It's probably one of our fundamental questions. Representative McNamara, thank you so much for coming up here. And now we're going to do the minutes as Brian Rice is coming up. Representative Bly.
I'd like to move minutes from the
February 28th meeting, I believe.
Sorry. Representative Pye has moved the minutes from February 28th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Did you have a question, Representative?
I did. I see that Representative Hansen left the meeting. I was hoping that maybe he would be here.
Oh, what, on the minutes?
Yes.
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. I'd like, a couple of weeks ago, Representative Hansen made an amendment to the minutes that, quite honestly, Madam Chair, I found it to be rather...
wait a minute. Are these on these minutes?
I would like to make an amendment to the minutes from February 28th.
We're not on that.
I'm sorry.
We're not on that.
Okay.
Is that right? We are. But you want to make an amendment to the minutes of February 28th?
Yes, that's right.
Madam Chair, if I recollect, I don't believe Representative Hansen amended the minutes. He made a remark about something that had happened in the minutes.
Okay. In this case, we're just going to lay over the minutes for. This is something that you may want to talk to Representative Lai about offline. We are not going to spend committee time. We'll just lay the minutes over. Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Rice. I represent the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and joining me today at the table are, and I understand we have about 20 minutes, so we'll keep our comments within that frame of reference. Steve Sullivan with Dakota County, Mike Kimball, and Jason McGrew from Three Rivers Park. In your packet, you'll find a color document that we prepared for the committee that shows in a blue column the governor's recommendation and a yellow column that would show what would happen if, as you either fund projects or allocate percentages, what the difference between a 40% allocation of these legacy dollars and what 50% would be. And it includes project descriptions, outcomes for each of the projects, so the committee members, as you make your deliberations on this, will know what projects you could fund or would fund at various levels. And just if I could call the committee's attention to Mr. Steffrud's document, it's page 5, it's a pie chart. I think what's important is using the four pillars in the legacy plan, Mr. Steffrud broke out how the dollars would be allocated over the biennium with the governor's recommendation and to connect people with parks, create opportunities, take care of what we have, and work better together. But as the committee considers this, I think what's very significant beneath that is a pie chart that what would happen with these $32 million. And on those $32 million, you'll be leveraging almost $29 million, $25 million in federal trail grants dollars, as well as Metro Park bonding dollars. So you're getting for almost every $1 you invest in these projects, you're getting an additional 80 to 85 cents in these projects. And I think you'll see as we go through our testimony that similar results will occur as you move these projects up. If there's more than 40% and we hit 50%, I think the federal dollars grow commensurately in that project. And also, the committee and Representative McNamara asked some very good questions about this regional system. In 1974, the legislature was contemplating making a major bonding investment in the metropolitan area to the tune of $40 million. And in order to make sure those dollars were spent wisely, they created the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission, which consisted of the 10 implementing agencies that you've been talking about. And the legislature was very reluctant to just give the money without a plan. And so they set up a comprehensive plan for the metropolitan area. It's in statutes 473. It required master plan, 5- and 30-year plans. It required representation throughout the metropolitan area in order to make these choices. And I think Representative McNamara raised a good point about what projects should get funded. Your committee, Madam Chair, is dealing with limited resources and have to make choices about what is best. And frequently in the process of the metropolitan area about what is making the best choices involves some people projects getting funding and others not getting funded. And obviously it's a difficult choice, so I'm sure you're going to hear many worthy requests before this committee. The question would be, what's the best plan? And the precursor of that, at the time there are only three state parks in the seven county metropolitan area, which has 54% of the population. There had been a precursor of this system. Minneapolis, for example, Minnehaha State Park was the first state park created in 1879 by this legislature, and it's still in this system, but many of the elements of this regional system go back over 130 years. And similarly, St. Paul, some of the other core areas have set land aside, like Como riverfront acreage. So the Met Council had to pull these together, develop a plan, set criteria, and one of the biggest criteria was it has to be naturally recreation-based. It's not playgrounds and tot lots. It's open space. There's a minimum acreage of at least 100 acres. Of the 51 parks in the metropolitan area, the average acreage is over 1,000 acres. So these are big land holdings. They're not small. In urban settings, they might be tighter, but as you go out to the periphery of the metropolitan area, 3,000-4,000 acre sites are not uncommon, and they've been set aside and really preserved in perpetuity. Mr. Steffer testified there's about 54,000-55,000 acres in the metropolitan area. That represents only 3% of the land mass in the metropolitan area, and it's probably our most precious asset. These lands have been set aside in perpetuity for our generations and future generations to do that, it's important to understand that planning process. It's a vetting process, and local agencies can propose a project. It has to go through the Met Council, Parks and Open Space Commission. Another key element besides acreage is use. These parks, these 51 parks in the metropolitan area, have to be, over 40% of the use comes from outside the jurisdiction that owns the property. So a key part is you have to be serving a wider audience than just your local area. And for example, in Minneapolis, we annually spend about $10 million maintaining our regional park system. 90% of the funding to maintain that system comes from our property tax payers. So our community is devoting about $8 or $9 million a year to host constituents not only from the metropolitan area but from throughout the state, and in fact people who come to our state from other states and even around the world. There are 44 million user visits to this regional park system, which it exceeds the Mega Mall in terms of its people coming in. As I said, a good 40% of those people are not from the host jurisdiction, and in fact we have 3% of the park visitors are from Greater Minnesota, which equates to over 1 million visits a year from citizens from Greater Minnesota to the regional park system. And there's a similar number from people coming from outside the state into that system. It's very efficient in terms of the cost. It's about an $86 million annual operating budget, of which 73% is paid by property taxes, another 17% is paid by user fees, and less than 10% comes from the state. The legislature, after the system was set up about a decade later, provided operation dollars, which is in the jurisdiction of this committee, and the legislation that passed in the early 80s said that the state should fund 40% of the cost of operating the system. At one point, we got as high as 20%. It's now under 10% because this does provide a huge state resource. There's about 50 of these parks in the metropolitan area recognized by statute. The DNR has a little over 70 parks in Greater Minnesota. And so on a population basis, there's one metropolitan regional park for every 50,000 residents of the metropolitan area. The 70 state parks in the DNR system, and there are certainly differences in use, but that equates to about one park for every 25,000. And you heard from Greater Minnesota about possibly 30 parks, as many as 130. Depending on how many parks you add to this legacy funds, if you added all 130 parks in Greater Minnesota plus the 70 DNR parks, you'd have one regional park for every 12,000 residents in Greater Minnesota. And I think that's a metric as you go through you need to consider. Just a couple other quick points. There was a very good report done by the University of Minnesota from Legacy Dollars when this was set up by Professor Vogel. And I encourage the committee staff reading. They came up with a very key metric. It was called the recreation location quotient analysis. And they looked at the various regions of the state. And basically what it did, it looked at recreational opportunities for people within a certain distance near to home, I believe it was 30 miles, and looked at the number of park resources available to population. And they concluded that in areas in the metropolitan area, particularly, the population was underserved by parks, even the system that we have. And they're also underserved in areas like Stearns County, Wright County, Olmsted County, where there were a large population, but a lack of state parks, because historically state parks weren't located in those areas. So again, as to Representative McNamara's question, the decisions that you make in this committee and how you plan for parks is critically important. That decision in 74 to set up the Met Council, have a master plan for the whole area to do it comprehensively and try to determine where to locate parks is very significant. A couple other quick points to touch on. Mr. Schoenbauer talked about economic development. These parks are enormous drivers of economic development. We've certainly seen that in Minneapolis with our chain of lakes, maintaining property values. You know, the city went through a very difficult period in the 80s, as other urban centers did. But what we found is the closer people were to park amenities, the more their property values held up and the more people stayed. And so, in another example, the state invested about $30 million in the Central Riverfront in Minneapolis through various bonding dollars. The city stepped up and probably put in another $150 million, and the federal government participated. That $250 million investment in that riverfront area generated well over $3 billion in private activities. There's 30,000 people living now in downtown Minneapolis. Businesses stayed there. And that regional park, which didn't exist 30 years ago, now has 1.5 million visits per year in that central riverfront. As I'm about to describe, we have a plan that if we had additional funds, we would continue that plan further up the river to green it. It would not have that intense development, but these are hugely important. And so I do agree with Mr. Schoenbauer that strategically invested, these park amenities are not only allow us to connect to nature, which the human soul desires, but it also is an opportunity. People want to get out of an urban environment and see a lake or be on a trail or be in a woods, not just see asphalt every day. The other point I'd make about these parks and the use of them, why it's so important, it's the best health club that you can invest in. To get 44 million people out walking around, jogging, running, walking, being in nature has immeasurable health benefits. And it works out in terms of the state appropriations. We get to about 40 cents for each visit that you invest in. And anything you can do to get our citizens out and in nature and exercising is hugely important. And I'll turn it over to my colleagues here, but in Minneapolis, because I do think, Madam Chair, you wanted projects and outcomes. The Minneapolis piece is on the page 6 and 7. It shows the baseline amounts and what would happen if we had additional funds. A couple of things. This plan that the Met Council has, and we can if it hasn't been provided to the committee, there's a 5-year plan that the Met Council adopts and a longer 20-year plan. And so you can open a book and look at it and say, where is these dollars invested? What are the outcomes in terms of either land acquired, restored trails? Federal matches are in those documents. And the basic one I would say here for the Minneapolis park system would be that the Central Mississippi River Regional Front Park, that if we get the governor's funding and allow for acceleration, we have an $800,000 federal transportation enhancement grant in 2014. That is the park. Now I said $1.5 million. We're now up to $1.6 million. In that park. And the other project that would happen at the very bottom is the Minnehaha Regional Parkway Trail. The county rebuilt the Lindale Avenue Bridge, and at one point to get through that bridge you had to go up to the grade, about 50 feet. You'd use the trail, go up and pass over and go back down on the trail. Because of the design the county did, we can now, with a half-mile link, connect that trail, and people would stay along Minnehaha Creek, be able to go under the bridge. And again, it's one of these good trail connections that will just improve use. And the other dollars where it would accelerate would be above the Falls Regional Park. I know this committee spent a lot of time about the whole issue about how to deal with the CARP issue, and I know that's a key issue, but we envision that once, as that issue gets settled, that this upper riverfront area in Minneapolis will have the opportunity. There's a heron rookery there with 60 mating pairs. There's a number of things that are coming to life with that upper river area. So with that, I turn over to Mr. Sullivan.
Yes, we want to make sure
yes.
Everyone has a chance to testify, so if you could keep it really short.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Sullivan. For the record, I'm the Parks. Excuse me. Thank you. I'm the Parks Director with Dakota County. I'll keep my comments short. The Parks and Trails Legacy Funds that are being requested by Dakota County are, as mentioned by Arnie Steffrud as well as Brian Rice, leveraging primarily federal grants for regional greenways. These regional greenways are essentially lineal parks. In Dakota County's case, they follow the Mississippi River at 27 miles from Hastings to South St. Paul, and then also along the Vermilion River and also the Minnesota River. And we've got almost all of the 27 miles of the Mississippi River Regional Trail we have federal funding for. So by 2016, you'll see a contiguous trail from Representative McNamara's district all the way into St. Paul, tying into Lilydale Park, and then actually there's a federal grant that will then go along the Big Rivers Trail that serves 145,000 people now, and along the Minnesota River and over to Burnsville. So
I shouldn't say this, but this is my favorite proposal.
Wow. I think I'll just stop there. Well, I appreciate that. We're really excited about the Mississippi River Regional Trail, and we're working with St. Paul on a grant, and you'll see on page 5 that there's funding for both engineering and design of $777,000 that will match a $1.7 million federal grant that will connect the Mississippi River Regional Trail from South St. Paul, where it exists, through kind of Holman Field to the existing trail that's in St. Paul. It's like you can see it, but you can't quite get there. And so this is a very critical link. The Parks and Trails Legacy Funds provides that allows that to occur. We also have another trail corridor. It's called the North Creek Greenway that connects Lebanon Hills Regional Park. It serves about 550,000 people to the Minnesota Zoo. And we've worked with the Minnesota Zoo on their master plan to make sure that this can go in and provide multimodal access so people can ride their bike and walk to the zoo, but also that those users between the park and the zoo can enjoy both places. In that case, we're looking at we're asking for $600,000 to match a $1 million federal. We're asking for $600,000 to match a $1 million federal transportation enhancement grant. The additional funding Dakota County would receive between 40% and 50% is about $500,000. That would go to fund. We have 9 active federal grants. We're very aggressive. About $10 million worth of federal funds for these regional trails, and so we would use those funds because not all the projects are fully funded. And with that, I'll be done.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Mike Kimball. I'm with the City of St. Paul Parks and Recreation Department, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. I'll try to be brief. We have a range of projects on your list. The list of St. Paul projects starts on page 12, and they're kind of in 3 categories. The first 3, the education and volunteer coordinators and the COMO shuttle, are designed to get people out into parks to reduce congestion, but mainly, as Brian alluded to, to get people out in parks, to get them to promote helpful activities and that kind of thing. The next set of projects are redevelopment projects, and the third is development projects. Mr. Sullivan with Dakota County alluded to the Harriet Island to South St. Paul project. That project will actually leverage $5.5 million of federal money. So the total combined, again, leverage $5.5 million. Our portion that's going to be leveraged is $3.7 million. Our match to that is the $925,000 you see on the list. The $860,000 for that is the design money that we have to put up before we can do any construction and get that matched money. We also have a project in Como, and we have a project in Lilydale. And Lilydale is the project where we would apply any extra funds, for instance, if we're going to from the baseline to an appropriation of 50%, the extra funds for St. Paul would amount to around $1.1 million. And they do say a picture is worth 1,000 words, so I'm going to try to be even briefer for you and switch over to the doc cam. Let's see if I can figure this out. Okay. The project where we would apply the extra funds, for the baseline, we are going to be working on realigning roads and trails in Lilydale Regional Park in the central part of St. Paul, on the south side of the river. And the additional money would be used to redesign and rebuild a railroad trestle, which is right in this area. The road as it is goes right under that trestle, and got a photograph for you, and I'll be quick. And as you can see, it's a very unsafe situation. This the road goes down to one lane only under the railroad trestle, and the trestle kind of goes like this and then up. Can't quite see it for the trees, but it goes like that. So we will have to rebuild this portion of the trestle so that we can get a safer two-lane road in there and also a bike trail along the side of the road, which would kind of go like that. I'm sorry my drawing isn't that good for this, but that is where the extra $1.1 million in funds would go towards rebuilding of that trestle.
Thank you.
So.
Next.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Jason McGrew-King, representing Three Rivers Park District. And the Park District's projects are on page 16 of your packet. And in the interest of time, I'll focus just on the two projects that could be funded at the 50% level rather than the 40%. The first would be the 50% level would allow us to reconstruct the play area at Baker Park Reserve in Medina on Lake Independence. It would allow us to build a new play area to provide enhanced play experiences and provide a new facility that would meet the latest safety standards. We find that our play areas are extremely popular, and they also serve as a gateway, especially to get families with young children outdoors and into the parks. Baker Park Reserve has approximately 539,000 annual visits, so this new play area would be able to serve those visitors. And then the other project, the additional funding would allow us to fund additional miles of trail on the Nine Mile Creek Regional Trail. That regional trail will travel about 11 miles through Hopkins, the city of Edina, and the city of Richfield. It serves an area of suburban Hennepin County that presently is underserved by regional parks and trails. The portion of the trail in Richfield is complete, but this would be a portion of the trail in Edina. It would help leverage federal funds. We do have federal STP funding to construct a segment of the trail, but the funding at the 50% level would allow for an approximately 1.25 mile of additional trail construction. So the bottom line is it would accelerate the trail project through Edina and get the trail to completion faster. Once it's complete, the trail would connect to the Minneapolis Grand Round system through the via the Inner City Regional Trail in Richfield, and it would also connect to the Three Rivers Park District system of trails in Hopkins, and it would connect also to the future Southwest LRT in Hopkins. With that.
Thank you. One of the things I think it would be helpful for you to do for us is one of the big lacks in our parks and trails system is the ability for Metro folks to get, the seven county Metro folks to get out of the Seneca County Metro and into the parks and trails system out in greater Minnesota, and vice versa, to get folks who live outside of the seven county Metro parks into the Metro. So that connectivity is important. And if you could, not now, but give us a sheet which would mark off any of these projects that would provide that connectivity, either directly, in other words, you're just going right to the line, or you all can do this better than I can, and also any other trails that would connect to trails that would allow people to make this in and out of the metro area, because we do want that connectivity. We have been too isolated. I think people agree with that. And one of the things we have asked for DNR at Parks and Trails is also to do that same kind of work for greater Minnesota. So we haven't seen that yet, and I don't know that that's available yet, but we have asked for those connect where state parks and trails can work with parks and trails in that connectivity issue. Am I making myself clear?
Madam Chair, you are, and we'll convene our group and get you a report as soon as possible.
Thank you. Do other members have questions or suggestions for this group? Representative Kahn.
The two of the directions that I'd like to see us go into. When
you Representative Kahn, can you speak into the microphone? I can't hear you back here.
It's hard to face people and speak into the microphone at the same time. But two of the directions, of which one of which you emphasized, is this whole concept of connectivity, of how much we increase the usage when we connect different systems. And I think that's the issue that Representative McNamara was raising, too, about how we connect something, get funding for something that should be connected to the regional park system. The other thing, the other two directions that I'm really interested in going in is the reaching out more to children, and I think you hit that with the creative play areas, and the other and then the other issue is reaching out more to disadvantaged groups and seeing how we're bringing parts of our immigrant community more into using our park system. And I'm not sure I saw any of that in this proposal. So, any comments?
Madam Chair, committee members. One example for St. Paul is the Como Shuttle, which does help bring in children and kids from diverse communities from all around the area into the park. So we are trying.
You know, Madam Chair, just a quick comment on that. The surveys that have been done at both the state parks and the metro parks does show a dramatic underuse of minority populations of our parks. There's some question it might be a survey technique, but I think you've hit on a very important point. So accessibility is big, but also there hasn't been as much mainstreaming, if you will, of our minority populations. So projects over though, like at Phelan or Worth in Minneapolis, those are about the only two parks that have a majority minority use.
Okay. With that, I think we would like to have Cortland Nelson come up and give us some closing comments here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for the presentation. We have, of course, heard from DNR Parks and Trails, but I think you might want to take an opportunity to welcome, just make any comments about how we are progressing or questions you have received from folks.
Madam Chair, Representative Cortland Nelson, DNR Parks and Trails, and with me is Linda Notch, our Chief Financial Officer. Maybe echoing the recent set of comments, particularly about the legacy, would that be a preference, Madam Chair, to talk about that?
It's up to you, yes.
Because there have been a number of questions that I'm ready to answer in a wide arena of our budget, but maybe with the time that we're in today, that might be a better use of our time. We do have a 10-year plan that the Commissioner has approved that brings out a number of important goals for us. For instance, over the next 10 years, we would like to acquire and develop 100 miles of trail. We would like to pave 200 miles of trail and or rehabilitate. We would like to establish 10 new trail connections. We would like to upgrade or renew 250 facilities. We would like to add 2,500 acres of inholdings in our state park system. We would like to renovate a number of campgrounds. And a list that follows down through that mostly relate to our overall package of capital development that we get, of which legacy is a part of that. You received in your handout today a five-page strategic plan for our legacy funds, and this really highlights what we would be proposing with the $14-15. The first page is a summary, and you'll recognize that that pie chart that we reviewed last time.
I think we are. This is good information for us, and I think you don't have to go through it. In particular, I would like to know if people have questions for you, because we've been through some of this basic information. Are there any questions for the Commissioner? I don't see. Director, excuse me. I don't see any questions. So with that, let me just then ask the question, if we could have a list of those trails that connect our regional parks of significance, DNR, where we can work together. We're always trying to find ways to make the people's money go further. And if we could get that list relatively soon, I think it would help this committee in its decision-making process.
Madam Chair, members, we will certainly do that and anticipate adding to that some questions I'm sure you'll have about our partnership with Greater Minnesota and our system plan that we have for our future development and other activities related to that.
Super. So if members have questions that they're just thinking about, if you would want to give them to Mr. Molson, he will get them to the director and to DNR staff, and we will share those back. And with that, I appreciate today, and meeting's adjourned.